Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We're here on Friday night. This is the weekly Missouri Grassroots Radio Roundtable. Missouri Grassroots Radio is the number one voice of liberty in the United States of America. I'm Dave, and I've got Kevin Harted, the hillbilly logic dude, here with me tonight. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thank you very much for the kind invite, and I appreciate being able to participate in the roundtable tonight.
You're in the family now. You'll be here any Friday night you want to be. The people want to hear from the hillbilly himself as often as they can. Great show last night, Kevin.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it, and I appreciated your participation in it too on some of the questions later.
Yeah,
you
had a great guest last night, Earl, the executive director of Missouri, executive director of Fair Tax Missouri, and that guy has some knowledge, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, and it sounds like they're starting to get a good ground game going, and it sounds like they're going to follow it up with trying to educate the public, which is what we drastically need to do.
We do, and listen, listeners, if you want to get in tonight, it's 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835, but listen up now, because this came up last night, and it's come up several times in the last couple of weeks. The House and Senate went home today. They're going to have the November elections. They'll come back for a very short session between lame duck session between the election and January when the new Congress starts, and that will really pretty much just be stroking each other and saying their goodbyes, hopefully to a lot of Democratic senators and representatives. And there will be very little work done there. But they're already talking now that next session they are going to take on some serious tax reform. So serious talk about tax reform will be going on next session. And you folks out there in radio land, in internet land, in podcast land, you need to get moving on this right now because I'm going to tell you what's happening out here. What's happening is that Dave Camp, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and probably will be chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the next session as well, he is not a signatory of the fair tax. And the feeling they're getting up there is that this fair tax is gaining steam, and they've got to get some kind of tax revision talk going. Maybe get some kind of thing named tax revision debated and passed to put the kibosh on the fair tax before it gets enough steam that someone will do something about it. So out there in Missouri, I don't know where you are in Missouri, but listen up. If you are in Missouri 7, where Billy Long works, if you are in Missouri 6, where Sam Graves works, or if you're in Missouri 2, where Todd Akin works, you are the only three people in Missouri who have a member of the House of Representatives who is co-sponsored on H.R. 25, the Fair Tax Bill. If I didn't just name your representative, you need to be on the phone, you need to be on the email, you need to be getting hold of that representative. Get a hold of his office while he's home, his or her office, because there's some hers that don't have their name on here, too. Be getting a hold of them in Washington, D.C., be getting a hold of them in the email, and you tell them this is something that you want, this is something that Missouri wants, and this is something that they better get on the stick for, huh? Don't you think, Kevin?
Yeah, I do, Dave, and I might also throw in there, if yours already has, then throw them a thank you. Just send them a short line and say, hey, I really appreciate the fact that you're on board with this.
Absolutely.
It's always good to have the positives, too.
That's true, and we do, you know, and I miss that myself, Kevin. I, you know, we get on here and we rail and we rave and we tell people to send in and tell your senator quit doing this, tell your senator quit doing that, tell your senator shit or get off the pot, and you know, we don't really often enough encourage people, and as voters, we don't often enough get on the horn and write a senator or congressman and say, hey, thanks, job well done.
Absolutely, and that kind of leads to no news is good news from those guys, and any time that they do hear from us, usually it's because we're in opposition to something, so it's good to be for something for a change.
It is. I wrote a couple of Missouri representatives, unfortunately not mine, back during the, if you remember, the debt ceiling debacle back there. I wrote a couple of thank yous for that. We lost
That's great. We lost that one bad.
You're absolutely right, Kevin. We need to be telling these people thank you. In the Senate, no Missouri senator, that is Reverend Blunt himself or Ms. McCaskill, have co-sponsored the Senate version of the fare tax. So that's Chambliss's bill, and I'm sure that it's going to see some talk in the next session, especially if the Republicans can take the Senate, and especially if the House looks like they're going to get the first foot forward in tax revision.
And that's one thing, too, that we got to really keep in mind, and that is we're talking about giving up quite a bit of influence and power to those that are in Congress through the tax code. So it is going to take a lot of participation from grassroots and the others that are out there. We need to be really active on this because they're not going to want to give that up easily, most of them.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're a grassroots activist listening to this show tonight or listening to the podcast and you don't know what the fare tax is, first of all, shame on you. And second of all, go listen to Kevin's podcast from last night. It'll be the 920 Hillbilly Logic Show. There's a very good explanation in there. You can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and you can go run through the blogs and the forums there. There's some very educational blogs and some good material there on this. And you know, Kevin, we're starting to get some traction in moving this fare tax even to the libs.
I think so, and you had touched on it. For those that are intellectually honest, and I say that whenever we're talking about politicians or anybody for that fact, whenever they really mean that they're looking to help out those that are in a bad situation, whenever they really mean that they're trying to make life better for some that may be disadvantaged in some areas. Those are the people that will, I believe, reach out to this. The others, honestly, they use that as a means to try to conjure up votes. I hate to say it. And it's much like, Dave, I look at it like we look over at the Middle East. You've got the Palestinians that have been in no man's land forever. You look around at a lot of the countries around them that are always rioting and hating Israel. And they don't allow them to come into their country. Egypt has them blocked out. All these other people have them blocked out. And it's like, you know, a lot of these other countries and nations could solve a lot of their problems with a little bit of effort. But you know what? It would take that trigger against Israel off the table. And I honestly think they're used as pawns by many of those countries over there and by the religious leaders. And I feel the same way about many of the issues. Whenever we're dealing with those that are struggling in this country, I believe they're used as pawns by many on that side that aren't intellectually honest on trying to take those things off the table.
That's absolutely correct. So you know, if you have some liberal friends out there, or if you have some more progressive friends, or even some socialist friends, for that matter, who who want to know about the fair tax, first, learn it yourself. Learn what it is. Learn how the prebate works. Learn why it works. Learn why it's a jobs plan. Learn why it's a fiscal budget-cutting plan, and learn why it's progressive. You can't do better for Fair Tax 101 than to go to Barnes & Noble, spend $6.50, and get the paperback Fair Tax book. It's an afternoon read. It's an easy read. And then follow up with some blogs and some info, because it's an old book, and there's been a lot of material written and talked about since then. But then when you engage with these people, just talk to them about the progressive socially redeeming issues about this. You don't need to talk about, you know, like Mitt Romney in his very, very truthful thing the other night. You know, you're not ever going to convince those people that we need this so that rich people can invest more money and make jobs. You're not ever going to convince them that we need this, although that's true. You're not ever going to convince them that we need this so that the rich people could bring their $13 trillion home to the United States and invest it. You're not ever going to convince them that we need this to get rid of the corporate income tax, which ends up getting passed down to them anyway. But you are going to be able to convince them that this is, in fact, a liberal tax because it takes care of the working poor exceptionally well. There's some tables at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org that show this perfectly. It is a huge middle-class tax cut. It is progressive to the point of really hitting the rich people, especially the rich people who your liberal friends like to scoff at, you know, who pay $2 million for a wedding and buy $1 million jets and $1 million mansions. Especially those people are going to be hit hard enough to make the average liberal smile. It's a jobs plan. So when you get into talking to your liberal friend about the fair tax, if they haven't bought it already, just remind them that it isn't really about that to them then. I have to eat hamburger and he gets to eat filet mignon and that's why I hate him. It has nothing to do with him not paying his fair share because this is the plan that has everyone paying their fair share, that does everything for the working poor, that is a huge middle class tax cut that taxes equally every drug dealer, car thief, pimp and prostitute, every bricklayer and waitress who's getting money under the table. Every tourist that comes here spending $11 trillion a year, not a tourist, but that's the tourist industry in the United States,
sure.
All of those things. And so, I mean, that's the answer to the question you're going to hear about, well, how can we get rid of all this tax and only charge people 23% and still make the same amount of money? Well, you know, we've been saying this for 100 years, but this is it. You don't increase revenue by raising taxes. You increase revenue by increasing the number of taxpayers.
And here's another thing, too, and that's also – I know it's compared as pies a whole lot, but it's very accurate. To get out of this mess that we're in, we're going to have to grow the pie. And what I mean by that is the economy's got to grow. We've got to grow the economy. We cannot do it by taking more away from others in this economy. It's got to grow, and once you start growing, it's exponential. I mean, things start piling up. It continues to grow at phenomenal rates whenever you're talking about the tax base and all the rest. So that is the only way we're going to get out of this. It's got to be done through a good tax code and through a very good energy policy, in my opinion.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree with you more. If you listeners, and I know all of our listeners are very familiar with Examiner.com because one of our favorite hosts here on Missouri Grassroots Radio, Lisa Payne Nager, is a frequent contributor there, and so I know you're familiar with it. If you go to Examiner.com, look up a contributor there named Doug Ellman, Ehlman, and check out his blog on exactly what you were just talking about, Kevin, and that is people make the mistake when they talk about the economy, and this is a mistake that both liberals and conservatives make, of believing that the economy is a zero net sum game. so that there's a piece of pie and it's a fixed size, and in order for one person to get a bigger piece, someone's got to get a smaller piece, and that just is not the case, is it, Kevin?
No, absolutely not. And further proof of that is whenever we have a collapse of the stock market, whenever we bottomed out, or whenever everything collapsed in the tech industry, there was $3.5 trillion that disappeared. It disappeared. It no longer existed. It's just like somebody lit up cigars with it. And the thing is, where'd it go? If it's no longer in there, then it must have went to somebody's pocket, right? Well, it didn't. The value of all of that just it vaporized. And
right.
In working in reverse, that's what we're talking about. You have to grow the economy to get us out of this. The pie's
right.
got to get. And,
right.
and whenever you got a bigger pie, you got bigger pieces. And the smaller contributions add up. I mean, it doesn't take as much of a chunk of each piece. To get us where we need to go.
Right. And so that's important to know. That's important to remember and to understand that economies grow and economies shrink. And if we can grow the economy, we increase the standard of living for everyone. It's that whole thing, about you put more water in the reservoir, you raise all the boats, not just the yachts.
Absolutely. And whenever we hear fairness so much, which we do now, in political ads and everything else, what we're hearing really, you could equalize everybody, and it's called shared misery. We do want to lift people up. We do want people to, and always, Dave, it's always the poorest that get hurt in these policies, continually. I mean, every time that they look at fuel. I mean, who do you think the gas prices, it hurts everybody, but it's going to hurt those with the low-paying jobs the worst. It's going to hurt those in the older cars the worst, the ones that get the worst gas mileage, everything else. It's not like whenever President Obama talks about you're going to have to trade in your SUV or your van, or you're going to have to get one of these high-mileage cars. You know what? That's not an option for a lot of people. It's not an option. They're trying to make it from point A to point B, and they don't have the funds to trade in that vehicle.
That's absolutely right.
It hurts those folks the most. And that's the thing that always gets me with those that are touting to be looking after the poor, the highest. And every time that they enact these things, even if it's a cigarette tax, even if it's these other things, you know, there's more lower income people that smoke than those that aren't. And that doesn't mean that if you smoke, you have to be low income. It just means that whenever you look at it, middle class and lower income people tend to be higher percentage smokers. And that's who you're taxing whenever you hit them hard.
Yeah, and it's not just smoke. It's not just smoke. It's like you say, gas and ground beef, which has gone from $1.99 a pound 3 years ago to $4.99 a pound now, 60% of that price increase is the fuel that went into delivering that. Another 30-40% of that is increased corporate taxes. And no, I understand. Don't call in and tell me corporate tax rates haven't gone up. I know they haven't. But what's happened is that Obama has stripped away some of the things that corporations can legitimately deduct as part of the cost of doing business, so their taxes have in fact gone up. When a guy who stands up there and says, "I'm the president of everybody, I want to make a better middle class," and in the next breath says, "We need to tax corporations more," he's talking about your ground beef. You know, he's talking about your loaf of bread. He's talking about your kids' school clothes. When he says we need to tax corporations more, he's talking about killing you.
Well, whenever he talks about energy, and whenever he's talking about electricity, and that the electricity rates have to inevitably go up, and that all of these coal power plants are going to have to pay through the nose for these carbon, this carbon that they're emitting, and it's the bottom line is that, you know, it gets passed along. I just got a notice from Ameren for a requested 17% increase in my electric bill.
Right.
Now, I mean, it's common sense. Whenever they sue, whenever the EPA sues Ameren for Rush Island, guess what? They might as well be suing each and every one of us because we are going to be paying that bill.
And, I mean, if you haven't been paying attention to the news since the day this man came to office, wake up, because these energy prices, gasoline prices, electricity prices, natural gas prices, these aren't something that just happens because of fluctuations in the market. This was the plan. This man sat in front of you and said, you know, if we do what I say, electricity prices are going to skyrocket.
Absolutely.
He said, he's got an energy secretary who made it a goal for us to pay what Europe pays.
Yes, and there's the other thing, and you have to figure, too, a lot of what they wanted to accomplish, again, they want to get rid of the SUVs, they wanted meet people to move closer to work. All these things was accomplished the last time that gas hit $4 a gallon. These folks, and they openly admit it at times, other times they deny it, depends on what crowd they're in front of, but we have audio and videotapes of them saying that it's good. I want you to Google high gas prices. Just hop on the internet and Google high gas prices, and you will get tens of thousands of websites and stories telling you why high gas prices are good. But I'm going to tell you, there's nothing that crimps the economy. The difference in a booming economy and not is the backbone is energy. It is. You can't get around it in the manufacturing phase. You can't get around it in the transportation phase. Energy is the backbone. And I felt that as soon as gas hit above $2.50 a gallon and stayed there for 6 months, this country was in dire shape. And what happens, you know, here's a classic example, Dave, and it may be a little simplified, but let's say in the trades, there's a lot of people that fish in tournaments that like to do a lot of bass fishing and things. And the bottom line is that takes most of the time. The big lakes and the tournaments are a distance away, so they have to get there. Their boats all take fuel. Whenever they're looking at the costs associated with it, instead of fishing in 6 tournaments this year, they're fishing in 3. So what does that do? That affects all of those hotels, all the restaurants, everybody else that happens to be in those areas, and on and on and on and on. That's not even talking about the additional fees for shipping for everything that you walk in. If you walk into a Walgreens, everything was shipped there. Everything. It's all affected.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything in the economy has that same kind of ripple effect.
I personally feel like, and if you remember whenever oil just bottomed out after the collapse of the tech market, I bought gasoline for $1.27 a gallon in Colombia. And I truly, in my heart, feel that the only thing that kept us from a total collapse at that time was the fact that the bottom dropped out the way it did, and we were able to bounce back a little bit. That's a huge difference. I mean, a huge, huge difference all the way around. Those companies that were shipping things, their profit margins went up a little bit at that time. Dave MacArthur was on last night. He makes deliveries every day. You can ask him how that affects his business. It affects everybody. It really does.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, one night on a roundtable, we're going to have to do a show about this energy independence thing, because I was talking to someone about this just last week, Kevin, and a lot of people have the wrong idea about what energy independence means. It doesn't mean, folks, that we drill a bunch of oil out of the ground and that's our oil. We are a capitalist country, and so when Exxon or Enron or Mobil or Shell goes out and drills this oil, we don't nationalize the oil industry here. We don't take over the oil industry the way socialist countries
Venezuela?
Do. Do what?
Like Venezuela?
Like Venezuela.
And they nationalize their oil?
Right. That oil is going to go on the open market, just like all the other oil in the world, and we're going to buy it from that market just like we buy all the other oil. But that doesn't mean that we can't reach a level of energy independence by drilling. So it's not a easy process to understand, and we'll spend some time on that, maybe even next week, on how drilling more oil equals energy independence. But you know that what Barack Obama has done to the oil industry is just another example, Kevin, of this ripple effect you're talking about. I mean, yeah, so he said no to the Keystone Pipeline, and the Keystone Pipeline was going to employ 8,000 people building pipeline and stuff. Well, there's another half a million waitresses and cafes and hotels and motels, car rental agencies, airports. There's another half a million people impacted by that, besides just the guys that were going to be putting nuts and bolts together out there in a field somewhere.
Here's another thing, Dave, and that is, it's not just the oil, it's the jobs, just like you just said, produced that are in that area. If you go to North Dakota right now, you've got hotels that were renting for about $350, two-bedroom apartments that were renting in the range of $350 and maybe a little up a couple of years ago, are now going between $1,700 and $2,700 a month. And that's because of the housing shortage is so dire up there. You've got people, workers that are staying in Winnebagos, they're renting Winnebagos, they're auctioning off hotel rooms. We don't hear about these great success stories. You know why? Because they are circled around oil drilling. And this administration and the press really doesn't want to push those things. We've got two areas in this country that are booming unbelievably. One's in Texas and the other one's in North Dakota. And I know guys that are going up there and working. I know that they're having trouble even manning McDonald's up there. I heard that some people are making as high as $15 an hour to work at McDonald's. So
yeah.
So you can see the difference that this is making in those local economies. And I can guarantee you those local governments are just brimming over with tax dollars and cash right now. They're not having to be concerned about being in debt, I can assure you.
That's right. I mean, and you know, this came to light, this little example here came to light 4 years ago when Sarah Palin finally, you know, got in the news and everybody was saying, who the hell is Sarah Palin? Who the hell is Sarah Palin? What's going on up there in Alaska? Alaska, oil economy, every Alaskan citizen gets a check at the end of the year from the government because the government is making so much money on this oil industry that they just need to give it back to the citizens.
You know, Dave, I was talking to an instructor from Canada just a couple of months ago, and their economy isn't thriving. I mean, really, virtually, there's no economy in the world right now that's really just banging big time. But in Canada, he's from the Alberta area. That's where those oil sands are, and that's where and their unemployment rate is a good 2.5-3% lower than the rest of the country in those areas. And that area has a lot of construction, has a lot of different business going on. It's booming considered today's economy. It may not be during a regular thriving economy, but again, all you have to do is look around these pockets of energy, and you're going to find thriving, booming economies.
That's right. It's absolutely amazing to me that one of the first things our president, who wants to help out the middle class, does is make energy in almost every way part of the economy of the past in this country. Oil moratorium, drilling moratoriums, kill the Keystone
coal
Pipeline,
moratoriums.
Coal, EPA cracking down on coal mines, coal burning moratoriums, even clean coal burning.
Right.
It's just incredible. It's incredible to me.
They don't want nuclear. They don't want coal. They don't want oil. They don't. I mean, you could go on and on and on. Anything that is economical in the climate in the world that we live in today, they don't want it.
And listen,
Jack,
we're not, you know, nobody in the world, and you know, when a liberal listens to this show right now, what we're talking about, they're going to point their finger at us and say, you guys want to ruin the ecology, you guys want to ruin the environment. Nobody on our side is against green energy. Nobody is against nuclear or solar panels. Nobody is, but the fact of the matter is, you can't even sell me one right now that can do the job, get the thing right, get it going, and then get it out there on the market and sell it, and people will buy it.
And here's the other thing too, Dave, is they don't think of the technologically advances that we've made to make these sources cleaner. Whatever we look at, we've got well over three times the amount of vehicles that we did 30 years ago on the road. These vehicles, well over three times the amount, emit less fumes than what the vehicles did that we had on the road 30 years ago. I'm talking about it as a whole.
Yeah.
You remember the smog problems that we had in the cities and everything else? You mean to tell me that we don't have how many more times vehicles on the road today? I mean, the technology has increased dramatically. That's another thing that bothers me, is that whenever he's shutting down our drilling in the Gulf and other places, you know, at the same time, the U.S. is loaning Brazil, you know, billions to promote drilling off of their shores. None of it makes sense on the surface. Again, we're talking about an ideology here. To me, it's almost like a religion.
It is. Oh, it absolutely is. And we said this on a show a couple of weeks ago. But you count the money that Barack Obama and the current administration is sending to South America to supplement. Subsidize their oil drilling industry. You look at the jobs that this administration sent to Canada, where that pipeline is now going to be built. And you are talking about a man who in 3 years has exported more jobs to foreign countries than Mitt Romney did in his entire career at Bain.
So I wouldn't doubt that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's easy to assess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's incredible, and it's asinine that these people get to stand up there and pull that card out and get away with it.
Now here's the other thing too, Dave. I mean, where do you think that the environmental controls are going to be better? If there's somebody, let's look at it from their perspective of a zero sum game. If we're drilling here in this country or in its around its borders, we are going to be adhering to environmental standards that are going to be higher than some African nation. It's a fact. And I never understood why they oppose so much us drilling in this area. And then, nobody's picketing these other nations, these poor third world countries that, nothing makes sense.
And you know what? The other thing is that the technology that this country possesses, the know-how that we have, the morals that we have in this country, and combined with capitalism in its best form, make us safer without any regulation. I mean, BP oil. Forget the government. Forget the regulations. The last thing BP oil wants, dollars and cents wise, is a well to start leaking 2.5 miles under the ocean.
Absolutely.
You don't see anymore. Forget the Environmental Protection Agency. You don't see any more Exxon Valdezes because an oil company cannot afford them.
No.
I mean, it is not the government that goes in when an Exxon Valdez runs into a bunch of rocks and says, okay, what went wrong here? How do we keep this from happening again? It's the guy that just lost $140 million worth of oil.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the greatest incentive right there. I think you hit it on the head.
Yeah.
But and people do not realize the natural reserves that we've got here. Back in 2008, I started pulling some audio podcasts off of the National Geology Survey website. I don't even know if you can find them on there now or not. But in just these couple, it talks about the massive reserves that we have within our drilling capabilities of today. And, Now, if you go to the National Geology Survey website, you're going to find a whole bunch of global warming stuff. I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling. It really is.
It is. It is. And we hear about all this. We hear about all this problem going on with contaminated water supplies because of this fracking. And you know where we shoot the water down there and we try to extract oil from the shale, and now all of the liberals are screaming, stop the fracking, stop the fracking. And the fact of the matter, brothers and sisters on both sides of the aisle, is that we would need to frack if we would drill for the liquid oil that's down there. We have more liquid oil under the shelf of this country than the rest, than the whole Middle East combined.
Yeah. And there's other areas too that have been discovered that is unbelievable. But I know, and I agree with you, Dave. But I also know that they greatly exaggerate. Many times claims are made without any evidence whatsoever. And
oh,
I
yeah.
think a lot of things going on. They shut down an oil field in Texas over a lizard because they said there wasn't an environmental impact study done to find out how this is affecting this particular three-toed lizard. And they shut it down just because they said they're not saying that it's affecting them, but there wasn't a study done to say whether it's affecting them or not. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's
yeah.
that kind of stuff that's insane. They just want to shut it all down. It doesn't
that's it.
Matter.
That's it. That argument has nothing to do with the lizard. It has to do with that oil well.
Absolutely,
I mean,
it
has to do with wanting to shut down that oil well, and wanting to shut down that oil well has little to do, you know, the whole green movement. And my God, I get so tired of people saying, you know, that we want to burn trees and we want to pollute the air and we want their children drinking dirty water. It isn't so, but the entire crazy, crazy green movement has nothing to do with ecology. It has to do with power, and it has to do with control. The whole global warming thing has nothing to do with ecology. It has to do with power, and it has to do with control.
Amen, Dave. You hit it on the head. And I think that's easy enough to prove, too.
It is. And we got here from talking about the fair tax, and I think that that's fair. I really do, because you know, when you talk about the economy of the United States of America, everything is so intertwined. The ripple effects of everything you do are so great, and even the things that we've been talking about, you know, the oil companies and the Solyndras, even those things are part and parcel of what we need to be talking about when we talk about tax revision. Because as Kevin said on his show last night, the number one reason for the fair tax, and I couldn't agree with Earl Moore when he said, you know, that I would oppose a flat tax as even being fair, because it leaves this crony capitalism in place that allows the government to play games with the tax code, to use it as a reward and penalty system. The fair tax does away with that. It totally returns the power back to the people. It is the biggest shift of power since the day the Constitution was written.
Absolutely it is. And you know, you had mentioned just a little bit ago about what this really is about, and that's important for people to understand. Whenever we look, I truly believe the evidence shows that a lot of the environmentalism, for one thing, if you look, a lot of this propped up too about the it's really got a lot to do with the socialistic communistic mindset. A lot of these people are active in that movement too. And it's a way to try to crush capitalism, but it's also a way to control currency. And I would love to get into this on another show, but it was a plan that was put in place in Britain. They were actually supposed to have it enacted by 2011, where every citizen was given a carbon credit card, and you were only given so many carbon credits a month. And what happened was that every time you made a purchase, they would swipe that card and you would lose carbon credits that was assigned to the products that you purchased. So a gallon of milk would be worth so much carbon credits. A gallon of gas would be worth, you know, many times more. Whatever they figured that that carbon was emitted into the environment or whatever have you. But if you think about it, whenever you were out of carbon credits, it didn't matter if you had the cash, you couldn't make the purchase. We're talking about a totally different currency at that point. Because if a totally different currency. And you're also talking about total control of the population. Because if you assign high carbon credits to something, you are going to persuade those people to stay away from it. And because they can't afford it. And it is total control of the consumption of the populace. Total.
Yes.
Wow. And the only thing that really kind of put the damper on that was the collapse of the economy. David Miliband had it lined out over there. Al Gore had been over there advising them since the late 2000s, which, by the way, folks, Al Gore was projected to be the first green billionaire. If you follow his investment portfolio and some of the shammy things he's doing and some of the sweet government contracts he was working on at the same time that he's testifying before Congress, are you kidding me? I mean, to me, the guy is more than a crook. He's a con man and a thief.
And a traitor.
And a traitor. Absolutely. And it wasn't, the bottom line is we're not going to, essentially, if you could go to carbon credits, then really you've got a global currency. You really do. It's almost just like producing a underground currency that your monies would be no good without it. None.
Right.
So it is, in effect, a new global currency at that point. And that is what these folks want to push us to.
That's right. And one that they control. They can expand it and contract it at will, just on a whim.
Yes, and assign whatever numeral they want to that thing.
Yep. So, that's right.
And that is why it cannot go forward. It's the biggest attempt to control the populace and change the currency that the world's ever seen.
And this is all, folks, part of something that we also need to talk a lot about, speaking of education, and this is all part of the Agenda 21.
Yes, it is.
So on the other side of the break now, we're going to talk about Arab Spring 2, some things still going on over there. We're going to talk about Governor Nixon embracing now, by name, the Common Core Standards in Education. Lisa Payne-Nager, she's out there tonight at an Aiken rally. She's going to call in and give us a report live from the rally here in a little bit. We'll, of course, talk about the things that are upcoming on Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and I'm sure that Kevin and I will find some other great things to talk about. Too bad Lisa's not here. She kind of spices things up a little bit. But we'll be back right after this break, and we'll talk about some cool stuff.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Would Washington or Jefferson be as respected today as they were alive? Could they even be elected to office today? Although we respect and admire our founding fathers, we no longer hold true to their vision and the founding principles that which was the backbone of this country. In his farewell address, George Washington stated, "The Constitution, which at any time exists, till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is scarcely obligatory upon all." The very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. Does this sound like the Republicans who convinced us to support the Patriot Act, which completely disregards the Fourth Amendment of our Constitution? It certainly doesn't sound like the Democrats who told us they had to pass it so that we knew what was in the health care bill. It isn't just politicians who have forgotten the message of freedom and liberty. The American people have forgotten as well by lowering the standards for candidates running for public office. Through our elected representatives, it is easy to see that the Constitution is no longer the primary objective of voters. American voters have become content with choosing between the lesser of two evils and sacrificing freedom and liberty in return for security. The United States is facing a true crisis. Will we still promote individualism and civil liberties, or do we no longer believe in these values? It is not up to the politicians and public officials to change their policies. This will not happen unless liberty once again becomes a primary goal of America and her citizens. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
347-677-1835. That's your number to get your opinion on the Friday Night Roundtable. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Friday Night Roundtable with Dave and Kevin. Lisa will be calling in here in a little bit. Kevin, do you know, I can't say I was flabbergasted or even surprised, but today, on this very day, in the New York Times, on CBS, and in the Washington Post, they are still saying that everything that's going on in the Middle East has to do with this film.
It's absolutely ludicrous and an embarrassment.
It is. That's the word right there that I was looking for. Embarrassment.
It's an indictment. It's an indictment upon our journalism.
I mean, with the evidence looking them in the face. I mean, with the Libyan with the Libyan government saying bullshit. It's not about that. This was a orchestrated terrorist attack on an American facility that, by the way, didn't have any bullets on it.
That's horrible.
It's crazy. You broke that on your show, by the way.
Yeah, certainly did, and it's insane. And honestly, I think it ought to be playing everywhere, and that would be what the president said or explained in his speech the next day or his 5-minute briefing. It's horrible at how he tried to misinform the American people. I mean, I can't. And if you listen to it too, or especially if you see it on video, whenever he talks about them carrying the ambassador to the hospital, where unfortunately they found out he had died, you could tell the man knows better. I break
right.
that in my heart. And he is not challenged on it, and I'm not hearing it much. And that's a shame. If you don't mind, I mean, I'll play it real quick, and it's a short clip. It's 23 seconds.
No, go for it. Yeah, go for it.
Already, many Libyans have joined us in doing so, and this attack will not break the bonds between the United States and Libya. Libyan security personnel fought back against the attackers alongside Americans.
Why?
Libyans helped some of our diplomats find safety, and they carried Ambassador Stevens' body to the hospital, where we tragically learned that he had died.
Are you kidding me? I mean, you look at that. They pointed him to safety, and then they pointed the mob to where they had pointed him. And then you turn around and carrying him to the hospital? Are you kidding me? They drug his dead body through the streets and took souvenir photographs the entire time.
Yep.
I'm just blown away by the fact that even still to this day, we're talking about a video. And the other thing in this whole thing that really gets me is the fact that this come on the heels of the Democratic National Convention. And we had 4 days of nothing but Osama's dead. Can you tell me why some of these groups were chanting Obama, Obama, we're all Osama? I mean, to me, there's more correlation with the fact that, that this comes on the heels of the Democratic National Convention than there does anything to do with the video.
It's crazy. It is absolutely insane. And you know what's absolutely insane is I still go to circles every day where people who call themselves conservatives, people who I believe in their heart think they love America, are still spouting the libertarian line of, you know, bring all our troops home. We don't need troops all over there. We caused this ourselves. We brought this on ourselves. Bring all our troops home and it'll all stop.
You know, I have a tendency to take people at their word. When Mahmoud Ahmadinejad talks about wiping Israel off the face of the earth and calls America the great Satan and that we have to go, I have a tendency to take these kooks at their word. Hitler had said a lot of what he was going to do, and people, oh, he'll never do that. Oh, no. And the whole thing is, you know what? I have a tendency, whenever they talk about going down these paths, of taking them at their word. Maybe it's a bad tendency. I don't know, but I think it's the right one. Here's one thing. If I could play this short clip too, and I found this, it was in one of my old clips that I've had of Louis Farrakhan. Now he's a leader of the Nation of Islam in this country, but it's another short clip.
And a good friend of Barack Obama's.
Yes, and that speaks out at many of these events. He's here again. We don't have the press coverage of this guy, and he is just hours upon hours upon hours of the worst diatribe you've ever heard. But this is one example of what I want you to pay particular attention of. And this was over, I'm going to say, at least a year and a half ago. I'd have to research the exact date. But listen to the countries that he names in this.
What you're looking at in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, in Libya, in Bahrain, and soon, very soon, in all the nations of the world, and even sooner, to take place in America. So don't you get bent out of shape. What you see happening there, while it's happening there, you better prepare, because it will be coming to you.
And keep in mind, this is to a crowd of tens of thousands in an auditorium. These things go ignored all the time. And the fact that, I mean, was he a prophet or was he an insider? I mean, they're too busy dragging Ted Nugent down to the FBI, and they've got guys like this running around all over the place, literally making threats, and I'm blown away by that.
Well, I mean, you've got to be disappointed. You've got to be, as you said, a word you coined earlier, embarrassed, and you've got to be a little scared. But you cannot be a bit surprised when you consider that one of the friends of this guy you just heard talking is now president of the United States, a president whose self-named mentor stands in the pulpit of a church that this man, that the president attended for 10 years and rails about, no, not God bless America. God damn America. This is our chickens coming home to roost. Go figure. I mean, what in the world would we expect from a spectacle like that? Yeah.
To me, I mean, whatever you look at, I mean, how would somebody be received if they had attended KKK rallies or anything else? To me, that type of hatred, that type of rebel rousing, it's hard for me to differentiate between these different groups. Hate, whenever they're spewing hate, it really is.
Yeah. Well, there is no difference. I mean, it's hard to differentiate because there is no difference. I mean, there is absolutely no difference between Jeremiah Wright standing in a pulpit in front of Barack Obama week after week, calling down Whitey, calling the white man Satan, and what goes on at a KKK rally. There is not a whit of difference between the two things.
And that's I believe that to be true. I just don't. We've gone a long way now. Here's the one thing. I mean, do we honestly think even race relations are better today than whenever the president was elected? Absolutely not.
No.
At the reluctance on behalf of the Justice Department to arrest people that are members of the New Black Panthers and others. I mean, you know, that people can try to laugh it away or disregard it. Bottom line is, the reluctance to arrest some of these people or charge some of these people or to get charges dropped that they were already convicted of, which has happened, and the DOJ has had an influence in that, then what you're going to do is you're going to get people aggravated that normally wouldn't be aggravated on race relations at all. And you're going to incite others to further perpetrate other actions. I mean, it's just... it's a disaster, and we're starting to witness some of the effects of it.
It is. I was telling one of my friends the other day that in three years, this man has set back race relations in this country by about 15.
I believe that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
He's definitely not a uniter. Not beyond a shadow of a doubt, he's not a uniter. He's a divider.
Yeah. Absolutely, and intentionally so, as we've discussed many, many times. Okay, we're having a good time here on Friday night. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Dave. Kevin's here. Kevin has a show on Thursday night on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Hillbilly Logic is some great guests. He spends 2 hours talking to you about what's important in America and things that are just, frankly, commonsensical, but just don't occur to most people, hence the hillbilly logic part of it. What do you see down the road at on Thursday nights, Kevin?
On Thursday nights, I think we're gonna be able to pull in some really nice guests. We want to take some look at some different things too. Also, you know, from the national level, but that affects each and every one of us. Whether it could be about how the FDIC operates. You know, we all see it on the bank windows. We all see it all the time. Insured to such and such. And the bottom line is we really don't, the majority of the people don't, you know, they really haven't experienced too much exposure to them beyond that. And believe me, they play a major role in the economy. We're going to talk about energy too give out some of the facts over some of the hype and some of the misleading statements that are made. There's going to be a lot of different things on top of some nice guests. So I've been fortunate enough to have on some nice guests and look forward to doing the same.
Those of you who aren't aware, Kevin graced us by joining us. He's got some real, unlike myself or Lisa or Terry or Mike, who do some time here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. Kevin's the real pro among us. He comes here with some extensive background. So he's actually, you know, he's the kind of guy that can pick up the phone and call these national names and say, hey, you know, I've got a show on Thursday night. You want to be on there? And so you want to be sure and tune into that, because Kevin can pull down the heavyweights. And there's going to be some good stuff going on there. On Wednesdays, Lisa Payne Nager comes along with the Culture Vigilante. Now, Lisa's a different kind of hostess. She's not really one who will get up there as a general rule and call down the Jeremiah Wrights and call down the powers behind the powers. Lisa is really, she's a homeschooling mom, beautiful, beautiful young lady who cares totally about the culture and how the culture intertwines with what is either conservatism or what is either progressivism. That when you say I'm a conservative or I'm a progressive, I'm a liberal, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican even, you're not just talking about politics, you're not just talking about ideology, but when you get down below that, you're talking about a whole culture, you're talking about what gets taught in schools, you're talking about how the schools run, you're talking about the things that affect your day-to-day life. You're talking about the things that that we don't usually think about when we're talking about the big picture stuff, like Arab Spring 2 and the White House. You're talking about you're talking about the city park. You're talking about T-ball. You're talking about T-ball. How is it you're talking about T-ball? Well, you've got two different cultures when you talk about a four-year-old kid playing ball. You've got the culture of let's teach these kids to compete, let's teach them to be competitive, and you've seen it happening in the last 10 years. You've got this, well, we don't even keep score anymore. We just go out there and play because it's really all about the game. That's exactly it, folks. Whether you are liberal or conservative is a lot more than whether you think the government ought to be giving somebody food stamps. It goes right down to the very fabric of your day-to-day family life, and that's what Lisa talks about. She talks about guardian ad litem. She talks about homeschooling. She talks about your churches and the government influence in your, not just government law or government intervention, but government, the insidious little influences that either the progressive or conservative bodies can have in your churches, in your schools, in your community activities.
That's a great show. She's also an excellent writer, so she's got some great skills in that aspect.
Yep,
those are very important things.
Absolutely. She blogs at homeschooling.com. She blogs, in fact, she is the blogger of homeschooling.com. She blogs at, is the major contributor at guardianadlitem.com. And all of this is something that Lisa is passionate about, because you talk about homeschooling.com. Now, Lisa will I'm sure once in a while fill you in on her own biography, but Lisa was a member of a school board. She was actually a member of the school board in her community when she looked around her one day and said, "Oh my God, I got to get my kids out of here."
Wow.
And so, I mean, you want to hear about why you'd ought to be homeschooling your kids if it's entirely possible for you to do. This is the lady you want to talk to. Then on Mondays, yours truly comes along with the Hour of Truth. This next Monday, we're going to have probably the whole 60 minutes with Laura Hoselden. She is very, very fluent, very informed, and very... is going to be very instructive to all of us on what the Fed is, why the Fed is, what's bad about the Fed, and why we need to. She is really into this audit the Fed thing, actually she's a Paulite. I'll tell you that right up front. But that's not all bad. If there's one of the many things that Ron Paul had right, it was kill the Fed. And that kind of got watered down as things went along to audit the Fed, and now of course that will be eventually watered down with Congress going home today and that bill not passing to leave the Fed alone. It's doing just fine. We'll talk probably there about the QE3, which is another thing that is absolutely destroying you folks in the next. Well, they're running it through. QE3 is running through 2015, Kevin.
Yeah, that's a disaster. And what they've done here is, regardless of who is elected president, they're trying to set it up for failure, flat out. That's how the ideology operates. You know, and really, whenever you look at it, and you look at, we're not dealing with dumb people. The bottom line is that people do things for a reason. These folks are doing things for a reason, and honestly, I mean, sometimes you just got to stand back and say the only thing that makes sense is, honestly, they're trying to collapse the economy to either bring in a world currency. I know that sounds wacky, but it's not so much. I've got I got a clip from MSNBC. If you guys haven't heard it, it'll blow your mind whenever they're talking about a new world currency. And it's like nothing to them. They go on about what they're going to do over the weekend, immediately after discussing it. And this was one of the biggest money firms in the country that was discussing this. It's been a while back, but the bottom line is, you know, it's all about power. And a lot of these people that are going along with it honestly believe that they're going to be set up nicely after the fact. But and that's the only way you can get these folks to go along with it. So there's a lot of hideous stuff going on.
I was a kid. A good many years ago, there was a radio show on called The Dangers of Apathy. I don't even remember the name of the host now, but it was just a little bit post McCarthy, by a little bit, I mean within a decade of the McCarthy thing. And you're talking about a guy who came on the air five nights a week and talked about the communist infiltration, the communist danger in America, the danger to us of being apathetic to what was going on. And we used to sit around and make fun of this guy, call him a crackpot. But, you know, my God, Kevin, look around. All the things that he told me when I was like 12 years old, they're happening.
Right. It's true. You know, a lot of times we will focus solely on a country or even an individual. Somebody may focus on the president, who wields a lot of power right now. But the bottom line is what is really dangerous is the ideas that that person has, the ideas that that country promotes. Because, you know, even if they go away, just like the Soviet Union went away years ago, yeah, that stuff didn't die with the old Soviet Union. It just became harder to detect, and they sowed new seeds. I mean, these folks didn't go away. That ideology didn't go away, and it makes it just more difficult to reveal it for a while until it starts sprouting, and we're starting to see those sprouts.
That's right. There's a fellow that does. There's a fellow, and again, I don't remember his name. I've seen several of his videos. Who does a series of videos, who was an ex-KGB agent. And one of the KGB, who was assigned, of course, as a directorate of the Soviet Union with the task of undermining the West, one of their first objectives is to take over education.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was, and I've had friends. One day a friend in discussion told me, what a disaster the educational system. And I'd say, no, I disagree. I think it's a phenomenal success if you look at what their goals were, what the true goals were, not the stated goals, what the true goals was. And you know, it's different. You pay more attention to the fruit than you do what somebody says. And we're seeing it.
Mark Levin or one of the maybe Neil Bortz, I forget which one. It wasn't Hannity or the fat guy in the morning who I don't ever listen to, so it was somebody that I listened to. was really chastised 4 years ago for coming out and saying they hoped Obama failed. And this is what they were talking about. You know, they were talking about hoping he failed. Not in that we're looking for another 9/11, but the plan was, and it's what you, the plan has been so far, what you call a phenomenal success. He didn't fail. He has absolutely succeeded because this was the plan, the collapse of the dollar. You paying $4.99 a pound for ground beef, you paying $4 a gallon for gasoline, the complete destruction of the middle class, the separation of this country economically into a class of elites, which he will be part of, and a class of serfs, basically, slaves. And he's done it. He's there.
And one of you, just to expand on that even further, it's kind of weird, but if you look at even like Detroit has been in a recession even in good times. I mean, they're God knows they're well over a decade now of really being in a recession as a city. And what do? They keep electing even more liberal or what progressive, I should say, politicians. So whenever things get difficult, whenever things get hard, people have a tendency to look to government more for that assistance, and they further entrench themselves.
That's right.
It was actually Joseph Stalin, years ago during an interview, there was the guy that was interviewing him was talking to him, and he said, hey, you know, you're really putting a lot of pain on your people. Aren't you worried about them revolting? I mean, you know, what's going on? I mean, down the road, you're going to pay a price if you keep putting this kind of pain on your own people. And he had him bring him a live chicken, which he plucked, that live chicken, while it was still alive. And then whenever he set it on the ground, it cuddled up next to his leg, and he put down bread that the chicken ate. And he said, you inflict enough pain on the people, and they will look to you for everything. And it's not far off the same ideology. It really isn't.
Nope.
There's evidence of it. That whenever things get – whenever what happens in a thriving economy, what happens, Dave? People get independent, don't they?
That's right.
They do. I mean, honestly,
And the more independent they get, the better the economy gets, and the more independent they get. And the good side of that cycle is a continuous cycle, and the bad side of it is the same cycle. It's the same continuous tail chasing.
Yes, it is. And whenever you look at that just that one aspect, and I want everybody to think about it for a minute. Look at a teenager that is coming out. Whenever their bank account is full, you know, they're a lot more likely, or even adults for that fact, they're a lot more likely to take off from work. They're a lot more likely to do other things. But on the other hand, if they're living week to week and they've got to have that, if they're sick, they won't miss. So, I mean, there is a definite method to the madness.
And so, Monday, we will talk about some of those things when we talk about the Fed and the importance of auditing the Fed and how we go about getting that done, auditing the Fed. A week from Monday on the Hour of Truth, I'm really excited. We're going to have Carl Bearden, a proponent, and we're going to have Gary Wigert, an opponent, both dear friends of mine, who are going to debate, actually discuss, because Proposition A, which is whether or not, and listen, folks, this sounds like it's going to be boring to you because you don't live in St. Louis, so why should you give a rat's behind? But this is about whether or not the state continues to control the police force in St. Louis, or whether the city of St. Louis gets to assume their own control. And this is, you know, if you're in Joplin, if you're in Cape Girardeau, if you're in Springfield, Kansas City, Lake of the Ozarks, this is important. You are going to be making a vote that has a tremendous impact on the life of the people in St. Louis. And it's important that you not just go in there and flip a damn coin, that you have an understanding of what's going on here. And Gary will be here, and Carl will be here, and they'll talk about the pros and cons. And this isn't going to be a debate, as in when it's over, you won and you lost. The objective here is to get the issues out there, to show both sides, both legitimate sides of this issue, and then have you go to the polls in November on this issue that affects someone else besides your life. A little bit more informed about what it is you're voting on.
Very well stated, Dave. Very well stated. And that ought to be very educational. And that's the big just behind this station and this network. We want to try to educate and also to be educated. You know, if you've got a different view or a different thought and you think we're a little bit off, you know, give us a call at 347-677-1835. You know, tell us why we're wrong. And that's the big thing, too. So much these days, there's many topics that really you don't have to be a villain to be on either side. There's just different philosophies. And this is a, I think Prop A is a great example of just one of those things. I think that there can be good points made on both sides.
Absolutely. You know, I blogged on this, you know, just speaking of, I mean, just to throw out an example of how issues really do have two sides, folks. And you know, you and I and all these listeners, we surround ourselves at our close tables where we break bread. I'm not talking about at work where you've got a lot of students who probably are of opposite political persuasion than you. But our circle is pretty much politically, ideologically the same as us, more or less. I blogged 5 years ago now to my friends on the right, and I said, "Look, I said, if you think that a little young woman with two kids, whose husband has fled the scene, and works 40 hours a week for minimum wage, if you think what it costs to go to the doctor ain't an issue to her, you better wake up." You know, these aren't non-issues. These aren't non-issues we're talking about here. And all my friends on the right were saying, it's free market. Just get out of the way. Just let it work. And that doesn't work for this poor little old lady. You know, it doesn't work when she comes home from work and her kid's got pneumonia and she can't take him to the damn doctor because she makes too much for Medicaid and she doesn't make enough to go to the doctor.
Right. No, that's a real life situation.
Yeah, and I said to my friends, I said, you know, you better come to the table with these people, and we better come to some kind of a mutual some conclusion as to what we're going to do about this, or we're all going to get something we don't like.
Right. Well,
Obamacare. Yeah. So ignoring these issues, or thinking that you've got a corner on the truth. Just because you might be a little bit more knowledgeable about what a free market is than the next guy, don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. There are real issues out there that we don't actually have day to day contact with, they are as real an issue as anything that you deal with in your daily life.
And the thing that I hate more than anything is whenever somebody's trying to marginalize somebody. They're not really taking in what they're saying, and they're not disputing what they're saying. They just try to marginalize them by criticizing them, by calling them names, by whatever. I mean, that's the worst trick of all, because you know, it's cutting out the arena of ideas. Throw it out there. I think that's what the founding fathers wanted. I know that's what Thomas Jefferson certainly enjoyed, and I think that. I think that's where everybody gets a little sharper. You know, even if we walk away and we're still in disagreement, bottom line is we're both better educated on what we just discussed, hopefully.
Exactly. And so that's where we're going to be going with this Proposition A thing on a week from Monday night. And then the Monday night after that, Election Eve, another great time with another 90 Minutes with Cynthia Davis. What a hoot, man. I had a great time with her the other night. And, you know, Missouri Grassroots Coalition got some mileage out of that. I saw we got some press today. I said Missouri Grassroots Coalition calls Cynthia Davis a viable candidate in a headline somewhere. So,
how could you not like her? You know?
Agree with her or not, but you got to love
right.
her.
Right, I agree with that. That's pretty neat, Dave. And I'll tell you something else, too. The hour of truth, you know, therein lies. Is there a more important word than truth? Really, there is.
Well, I think not. So we'll change your name to Hillbilly Truth, then, on...
And the reason why Hillbilly, I mean, it's kind of funny because you talked about contacting guests earlier. You know, some of them in the past have balked a little bit because Hillbilly Logic, you know, they're thinking that maybe it's a, It's a cut up where you're going to try to, where you're calling them stupid or something along those lines. It's like, no, not at all. It's just making sense out of the senseless. I mean, all we want to do is just educate people on the different sides of the issue. And it's always a lot of fun. But you have a great program on Mondays, and everybody ought to be catching it. You've got some good sounding guests coming up. I mean, all we hear is the Fed this and the Fed that. What better way to find out about the Fed than tune in next Monday?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we've got 635 members now at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and I mean, without it being in any way a put down, 50% of them probably don't have a firm grasp of what the Fed even is and does. And, you know, here we are out there in our arrogance trying to push some kind of an audit the Fed thing down their throats. And goodness gracious, I mean, what's going on with that? Anyway, at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, as our most of our audience knows, we're looking for your group to come along and join us. We deal at Missouri, and I know, you know, here tonight, Kevin and I, we spent a lot of time talking about Obama and the Middle East. But at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, true to our name, we've decided some time ago that the way the parties are working now, there's not much we can do about changing things from the top down. I mean, here in the neighborhood, here in the culture that we live in, we're just not going to have a whole lot of input into whether Romney or Santorum gets to be the next president. We believe that we can change things from the bottom up. And so we concentrate at Missouri Grassroots Coalition on committees, central committees, counties, county commissions, cities, mayors, city councils, even the state, quite a bit on the state legislature. We put a lot of pressure on the state legislature. We work closely with other groups. Missouri Grassroots Coalition came about last December as an umbrella group. We are not a governing body. You are welcome to bring your group to Missouri Grassroots Coalition and not give up anything that you hold dear, not concede any of your principles, provided that you come to the group with the three basic tenets of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. Those are the three things we do. We don't get into the social issues, so if you're a right to life group, you can come. If you're a libertarian group, you can come. We'll break bread together because we have these three things in common, and our purpose, and Kevin made some remark a little while ago about how powerful the president had become. The objective of every grassroots movement ought to be this: to make the president of the United States irrelevant to your everyday life, because that's what he's supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the great thing is, too, Dave, they don't have to give up their sovereignty, just like you said. I mean,
right.
As long as those three things, unfortunately, just like right now, we've got a president in there that really I call Hugo Chavez Jr., because, I mean, he gives no regard for the law. He creates law out of nothing, out of the spoken word, like the immigration policy, and then he does not enforce laws that he doesn't like. And that is the most dangerous ideology that you could possibly have. The most dangerous.
Yep. You know, I was and hat tip to Mark Levin on this. I was listening to Mark Levin a little bit this afternoon. And just an example of what you're talking about. You know, we come along with this report today that says Eric Holder didn't know anything about Fast and Furious. That he's fired a couple of people and that's going to take care of it. And he didn't know a thing about it. And yet, And so you've got Carney and even the president himself coming up and saying, well, hell, we tried to tell you that, and Holder, we tried to tell you that 10 weeks ago. And yet, look 10 weeks ago, and you've got a president who's declaring executive privilege on this thing, and now they're
right.
saying, well, we tried to tell you there were no executives involved in it.
And let me also say, if he had no knowledge of it, then he ought to be released for being inept.
Exactly.
So either way, he's got pie on the face as far as I'm concerned.
But and then another thing about Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and then we're going to move on to stuff we promised you we'd talk about. Last December, just weeks after we formed up Missouri Grassroots Coalition, as a bunch of refugees from the Herman Cain campaign who were just absolutely disillusioned with the way things were going and adopted this bottom-up philosophy of getting things done. We got together and decided we wanted to do, because it was Christmas, and because we were trying to do something actually at the time to bring our own people together around a cause. We were, you know, our folks, including us, we were stumbling in the dark. We were numb from the Herman Cain disaster. And so we did this Secret Santa thing, and we collected $250, and we went out and helped two families, one in St. Louis and one in somewhere in the northeast, northwest. And we just went into a Walmart or Kmart, Target, and said, okay, give us a on Christmas Eve, and said, hey, we want to pay off a layaway of someone who has a lot of toys on layaway. It's 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve, and it's obvious that this family is not going to get their toys in time for Christmas. We didn't ask why. We didn't ask what the political affiliation was of the family. None of that mattered. We sprung those toys. We made sure that the family got the call and that they were headed down to pick up the toys, and then we just kind of disappeared into the twilight like the Lone Ranger.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it made us all feel great, and it did something good. And so we decided about February that we were going to go ahead and start in February of this past year collecting for next year. We would set ourselves a modest goal of twice the amount, four families, $500. And we've been collecting nickels and dimes since then. Because we know, we know from last year, and we know from how it is for us, how we feel when we have to walk by the red kittles in November and December, because we've already been tapped out for as much as we've got. We know how hard it is for us to beg you for money and for you to let money go in November and December. So what we wanted to do was stretch out this giving throughout the year. So if you'll go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org tonight, tonight for sure. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button in the top right, go to the Secret Santa page, read all about Secret Santa, and use the PayPal button and drop us a buck or $2 or $5, $10, whatever you can afford. Make it low. Keep it $2 and make a commitment to us that you'll do that twice a month. Every time you get paid, you'll drop in $2. Every penny that you donate is going to go to this cause. There's not a dime of overhead here. There's no salaries at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. There's no transportation payments given to anybody for driving to Walmart. There is no advertising. There is zero overhead. Every penny goes to this cause. So go there, please, tonight, as soon as you get done on the radio here, or even on your computer. You're listening to this on your computer right now while you listen to us. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can do that and listen to us at the same time. Click on the Secret Santa button. Go to the PayPal button and give us a couple of $3. If you don't have a PayPal account, if you don't carry a lot of credit cards, if you don't want to use PayPal, you don't trust PayPal, our address is there. Just drop us a check or a money order for whatever you can afford. And let's make this thing happen again this year. Okay, what do you want to talk about tonight, Kevin?
That's really neat. One of the other things too, in a good gesture, the Festus VFW. Now this is if you're listening to this in the archive, it may be too late. But if you're listening tonight on September 27th, which happens to be tomorrow, the Festus VFW is going to have an all-day event starting at noon with food, entertainment, music, and also you're gonna have some service personnel there, some service officers that can also help assist people if they're having issues with the VA, if they're having other types of issues with military organizations within the government. So swing on by for a good time. And it's gonna continue on during the course of the day, but there should be some help there for those that are seeking it, and should be a good time. And again, that's Festus, Missouri, the Festus VFW Post 3777. And if you do make it by, look me up.
Cool,
After that, one of the things that you had talked about, Dave, was the core curriculum, and I know that Lisa, that's probably high on her. Agenda
as far as that.
And I guess she's probably tied up at the Aiken rally, as we talked about earlier. But I wonder how that's going.
I don't know. We should have heard from her by now. She promised she'd call in, and I guess she probably they get to celebrating down there at those are pretty wild parties. Those Aiken things, they're pretty wild parties. So she may have gotten to a point where she couldn't find the numbers on her cell phone or something, but
even the phone died. I mean, that happens too.
That happens. Yep, that happens. That does happen. But anyway, I keep wanting to call the guy President Nixon, but he certainly isn't. He thinks he is sometimes. Governor Nixon came out today, and by name, it's the first time I have heard anyone by name embrace Common Core. They usually try to hide it or in some way subterfuge the name of what they're talking about. But he came out and by name embraced Common Core today, and that is a pretty scary proposition. But we expected to have Lisa here tonight to go into this. As you said, she is the pro. But for you folks that don't want to stay around and wait for Lisa, Common Core basically is this. There is this core curriculum and this specific level of achievement for these core curriculums, and they are the same in every school in your district, you think? In the state, you think? No. Every school in the United States of America has the same core curriculum, has the same achievement standards by grade for that core curriculum. And here's the dangerous part. Here is the really dangerous part for your liberty. Those cores are what's tested for college entrance. Now, think about that for a minute, and think about what the objective of that will be. Think about what the objective is, and then think about what they are going to accomplish by doing this. What they are going to do by making this core, this Common Core, national, and making it the basis for college entrance testing, is they are going to force that core into every home school and into every parochial school. Because if you want your kids to have a shot at going to the state college, you damn well better
have
teach
to know that.
You better teach
right?
them this. That's right.
Yep.
And
so again,
and,
it's a control to those that they can't
right.
get control of.
That's right. And you want to know. You want to know where we're going with education in this country and where this core is headed, because it is headed in exactly the opposite direction that you want your kids to go if you bother to homeschool them or send them to a private school. It is going in this direction. You can't find 5 out of 20 sixth graders today who can tell you anything about Thomas Jefferson except the fact that he owned slaves.
Yeah, they'll surely make that point.
They make that point. They make that point for darn sure. And those are the kinds of things. I mean, there's going to be very little legitimate U.S. history in this thing. there's going to be no room for what you want your kid to learn in your homeschool or in your Catholic school about the foundations of the earth, about biology, about physics, the things that you want your kid to learn. Not only that, let's say you pulled your kid out of school because you want him to memorize multiplication tables instead of learning some stupid matrix that is hard to manipulate and makes it unnecessary, but yet makes it unnecessary for him or her to memorize multiplication tables. Well, you better take this matrix and incorporate it into your math class in your home school anyway, because if they can't do that matrix, they can't go to college.
And also, I mean, that's just like many schools right now have totally gotten rid of spelling tests.
That's right.
Totally.
I mean, that's right.
Most in junior high and high school, but some in grade school even.
Absolutely. That's right. And so I'm sitting in this retail store that I manage, and I'm watching this correspondence come down from corporate headquarters, and I'm looking at the spelling and the grammar in this thing, and I'm saying, holy Christ, these people got PhDs. You know, these people got master's degrees in business administration, and they can't string 10 words together.
And here's the other thing, too, and I've heard teachers defend that are in support of it by saying that, well, everything's got spell check now and everything. Well, how many different wares are there? How many different other things? How many words are used in multiple applications to mean different things? And how that the spell check doesn't catch that's for sure. And it's ludicrous. I think that it's a good thing. I know that they certainly helped me out in grade school. I may not be a perfect speller, but I would have been many times worse, I believe. Dave, it looks like we may have a caller in. Hopefully, that might be Lisa with us. But
how in the world do you talk so poorly of this great
Dave, wait a minute, education Dave,
system?
Wait a minute, Dave. Wait a minute, Dave. It's not your turn. Go ahead, Kevin.
That's all right. I was,
what's his name, Kevin?
Kevin, yeah. Hey, we got Dave from St. Louis. He wants to have a say about the education system. Go on, Dave.
Hey, this guy must know me if he's calling me a loser.
I don't understand. How can you gonna let me talk or what?
No, maybe. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. How can you talk so poorly about the educational system? I think they do a great job.
I think they do a great job at what their goal is. And unfortunately, it's not educating the kids.
I think they do a terrific job.
Well,
who are you kidding?
Where are you coming from, Dave? I mean, a tremendous job of what? A tremendous job of what? The graduation rates in the big cities right now is 50%. What kind of great job is that?
I think that's a terrific job. Have you seen losers that they have to put in the school system?
Okay. All right.
And they obviously don't pay the teachers enough.
Okay, wait a second, Dave, because you and I are saying the same thing here then. The teachers are doing a great job. The education system sucks, and that's what you just said. The losers they're putting in the school system.
That's right.
The teachers are great. I don't have any problem
with all the teachers are wonderful. In fact, I think they need to double their pay.
Well, you find me the money, and I'll go along with you.
We can always tax the citizens more because I don't have a problem with that. I think the citizens need to pay for what they do, for what they're getting.
So are you saying that New York, which is paying over in excess of $15,000 per student, I believe right now for public school, and they have a graduation rate of under 50% now because they are paying that much more, their results are that much higher, right?
But they're trying. I mean, that's the most important thing is that they're trying.
Oh, my God. Barack Obama's trying, too, for Christ's sake.
What do you have? You know what? I don't know why do you have a problem with Barack Obama. Are you a racist? Is that what you're saying? Are you a racist?
No, I'm not a racist. I'm not a racist, and only a racist would say that. I mean, if I say I have a problem with Barack Obama, only a person who thinks racism would say, I said that because I'm a racist. No, he's a bad president. He's a crappy leader. I have a problem with that. He has no character. I have a problem with a man with no character.
I think I can kind of sum this up in one question, Mr. Cork.
I doubt that.
Did you support Herman Cain?
Did I what?
The other Dave Cork, did you not support Herman Cain?
Oh, I was a great supporter of Herman Cain. Yeah, were you, Dave?
No.
No,
no,
are you
a black guy? I don't like black guys.
I know this is all satire now.
Dave,
you got to remember, Obama is half white. Now, let's be honest. Now, I have a question to ask you, Dave, and is the other guy Kevin, right? Is
right,
Obama
right.
half black or half white? That's an answer I want to know.
Well, it depends. It's back to a glass of water. Is a glass of water half full or half empty, right? I don't know.
You're comparing Obama to a glass of water?
as transparent as one.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. That is true, too. And he is all wet.
Transparent and full of toxins. Yeah, that's a glass of water. So anyway,
Dave, I'm pulling your leg here. You know
I
that,
know.
Don't you?
But what we were saying is, and I agree with what you said, whether you were pulling my leg or not. We have some great teachers out there, and I don't ever want it
really?
To be fun.
Is that why I homeschool my daughter, because the teachers are so good?
No, we have some great teachers. Now, that wasn't.
That's the answer right there. We have some great teachers.
We do. We do. And we take a lot of guff. We take a lot of guff here because people call in and think that I'm bad-mouthing every teacher out there. I'm certainly not. We have some great teachers out there, but the education system sucks. And
if you can count those number of teachers on one hand, I don't know how good that is.
Well,
we had Earl Williamson on last night. He was a 29-year teaching vet, and I'm sure that he probably was a very good teacher.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. And you know, I came out of the Air Force. I spent 25 years in the Air Force. I came out. I actually went and started working on my teacher's certificate because what I wanted to do all 25 of those years was come out and teach high school math. And you know, I went three semesters of this teacher's certificate, and I said, man, I do not even want to be involved with this system. And it's not the teachers. It is the system that is horrible. And we've got a legislature in this state now that keeps talking. I mean, the Tim Jones, right?
Speaker
of the House next session keeps saying that one of the top three things they need to work on is education, and it's all about school choice. Well,
why are
they
involved in education to begin with? That's what I don't understand.
Well, because Thomas Jefferson told them to be.
And you heard that personally?
No, I didn't, but I read it personally.
I want to say hi to my friend Kevin.
Hi, Dave. Yes, absolutely I do.
Who is it?
From the inception.
What's that?
I said I knew from the inception. And
you
I appreciate that. You giving us. Yes, I did. I appreciate you giving us a call and poking us in the ribs. it's good, right? It's all good. So it's.
No, it is. It is, honestly. And I appreciate you guys being on. Seriously, I'm just giving you a tough time here, and I apologize if it's an inconvenience here.
It's not an inconvenience at all. I was quite frankly getting kind of bored of talking, Dave.
Well, I understand. Jeez. Believe me, because when I'm doing my shows, I guarantee you, sometimes I wish somebody nuts would call in, and so I thought, what the hell? I'll go ahead and call in. I can be nuts sometimes. It's a Friday night, you know, and that's how it goes.
There you go.
Friday night full moon.
Does Dave understand who this is? By the way,
I don't.
Okay,
probably not.
Dave, by the way.
Do what?
This is Super Dave, by the way.
Super Dave. Hey, yeah, I've talked to you. I've conversed with you online before.
Yeah, you got mad at me or something, didn't you, or whatever?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe are you a fair taxer? There's something that you and I disagree about, but I forget what it was. Do you think we ought to be bringing all these troops home?
Absolutely, we should be bringing these troops home.
Okay, that's probably what we disagreed about then.
Oh, okay. No, we should be actually, no offense to Kevin, he doesn't know either. No, I think it's time that we bring a lot of these troops home, because the wars that they put up there right now are basically to feed the military-industrial complex, and I think it's time that we stop the wars. You know, we've been 10 years in Afghanistan. If we have the greatest military in the world, why are we there for 10 years?
Well, that's a political question, not a military question. Or that's a political answer, not a military answer. We should not have been there for 10 years. We should have gone in there, and in about 10 months, we should have wiped out who we needed to wipe out, and we should have wiped our feet on the mat on our way out the door.
If we looked at the environment that we are in today, 24/7 news, the political correctness that we exist in, you know, we never. I'm almost thoroughly convinced we never would have won World War II had we had the same environment that we do today.
Absolutely right.
And I also believe that it's the same thing that we have those that are involved in decision making that honestly are not a big fan of the military, and they also do want us to languish. They want us to languish. I believe that.
Well, and it's not only just not being a fan of the military. I mean, George W. Bush, who wasn't a military mastermind himself, for Christ's sake, made certain to point out the day we went in there that this was not a war against Islam. Well, we didn't need to say that. I mean, everybody would, if they didn't know that the day we got there, they would have known that when we went in there, killed these people who needed to be killed, and came home without destroying a whole lot of Islamists. We never needed to bring the word, we never needed to spit the word Islam out of our mouth. We never needed to make any reference to radical Muslims. Some bad, bad, bad people killed 3,000 Americans, and they need to die. Period.
What is that?
Let me announce something here right now. In not next week, but the week after, I'm going to be doing some shows on 9/11 because I'm going to be accused of things here, but I have a lot of problems with our own government, what we're doing. And frankly, a lot of things that happened on 9/11 that I have a lot of questions for, and a lot of people out there are scared to death to even ask the questions, because when they are, they're chastised. And
okay.
When we stop asking, what's that?
I said, okay.
So I hope that people, I'm not trying to take over your show, nothing like that. It's just
no.
I hope people have an open mind and understand that we have to ask questions. And one of the things we do as Americans is we just dumbfoundedly go, whatever they tell us, I'm going along with, and that's so dead wrong. That's what gets us in trouble.
I get so pissed off by someone at Missouri Grassroots Coalition the other day, and quite frankly, I guess I wasn't angry enough to even remember who it was now, but on 9/11, somebody tried to come along and have one of these conspiracy theory discussions, and I'm thinking, you know, you come back to me any day of the week, and I'll argue these points with you. But this is the day when we remember 3,000 dead people, you know, and you don't get to come along to come along on Memorial Day and trash fallen soldiers. You want to come and have a discussion with me any other day of the year, but Memorial Day, about fallen soldiers and how they all got killed because America supports gays. We can have that fight, you know, but you don't get to have that fight with me on Memorial Day. And I felt the same way.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say, I once posted a video by Tracy Lawrence called Arlington, and had somebody just go off on me at no end, telling me how they don't owe the military 1 ounce of anything, and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I think that's a, you know, there are appropriate times to
sure.
discuss those things, much like you wouldn't discuss many things at a funeral. Hopefully, you're not gonna rehash a lot of things at a funeral or a different memorial or a graduation ceremony or other things. I just think that there are appropriate times.
But anyway, Dave, you're gonna put in here before we have to cut you off because we've got like 9 minutes left. I'm gonna have you put in a plug for yourself. And so be sure and tell us what night you're going to do the 9/11 thing, because I want to get in on that. I'll be calling you, and it won't be satire.
Well, that's all right. All right, next week I'm just I've been off for a couple of weeks to kind of regroup, so next week's a little bit different. It's basically talking about the party establishments themselves. But the following week, it's my 9/11 week, and it's basically to bring other evidence to people for them to think about and stop being so stupid as to sit there and believe what the government's version is. At least be open-minded enough to understand that the government, there's a reason why the government tells you things, and when the approval rating of Congress is 10%, I'm trying to figure why they believe 100% of what they've been told of 7/11, listen to me, 9/11. So, it's one of the things I want to bring to light, and I hope that people at least listen and give us their ideas and be open-minded. That's the biggest thing. And all I can tell everybody that's listening now is Building 7. That's all I can tell them.
Building 7. Okay. we can talk about that when I call you, Dave. Building 7 is a non-starter as far as conspiracy theories go. It's a zero, a big zip.
Oh, God, David, please call up because... I'll enjoy every minute of this one.
Yeah.
This is a teaser.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for having me on, guys. And
thanks,
Kevin.
Hey,
I'll see you tomorrow in Jefferson County. I'll be there.
Thanks. Over at the VFW?
Yes, I'll be there.
Outstanding. Good.
All right.
Look forward to
it. I happen to be in St. Louis, and you know, David, I am from Springfield, Missouri, honestly.
You know, I knew that. I did know that.
I am, let me correct that. I live in Springfield, Missouri. I'm originally from St. Louis.
Right. I didn't know that, too. I have actually followed your show in the past.
And you still, okay. We'll leave it at that. I won't go any farther. We'll leave it for my
all
show.
Right.
You call up anytime, David. You feel brave enough, and I'm always kind. Except for Kevin. I don't like Kevin, but everybody else I'm kind to.
Hey,
okay.
All right, brother.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right.
Thanks,
we'll see you, Dave.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
So that was Super Dave, folks, and you can catch his show. He's going to be talking about it. I guess he's going to spend a whole week on 9/11, huh?
I'm not sure. I just know that one Monday, he's got lined up a guest that he thinks is going to be pretty entertaining or enlightening.
I am not a person who believes 100% of what the government says, and I've spent extensive time, as in hundreds of hours, on 9/11. I think I've probably looked at footage from every angle that's ever been taken. Of every building that came down. I've looked at all the footage that I can find anywhere of the airplane crash in the field in Pennsylvania. I've looked at every bit of footage that has ever been made available of the plane crashing into. I've listened to all the 911 tapes. I've listened to the dispatch calls. I believe it. I don't think there's I don't think there's anything else that could have happened.
I think that there were mistakes made from the security side of things.
Oh, absolutely.
But as far as I don't believe that our own government was in on it. I think that they may have been inept in some areas leading up to it, but I don't think that
they
was a conspiracy.
They were even considerably inept at some things that happened after it.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, they were. And again, you know, I see where some people have different thoughts. I mean, whether it's a Kennedy assassination or bombing of Pearl Harbor or anything else. And I'm with you. I've really tried to look at it. I just don't. Here's another problem that I have with that whole thing, Dave, and that is it's the same thing that you can hear from a taxi driver in Pakistan.
Yeah.
At the same time, we saw the videos of celebrations in the streets. We had Osama claiming responsibility himself. You know, we have tons of evidence of that leads us to believe that it happened as it happened. As far as I'm concerned, again, we had failures in the system that could have prevented it, but I think that that's where the fault lies. I can't come into any other greater plans with that whole scenario.
No, and it is too large a thing. Would have involved way too many people. It's just way too large a thing. I mean, to start with, you know, here it is. Here it is, basically, in a nutshell. To prove that it was a conspiracy or that it was anything other than what it appears, you have to explain away a whole lot more stuff than taking it for what it is.
Well, that's true, and you know, I never really thought about it, but you just said something that even further convinces me, and that is, it would have been very, very deep. It would have taken, and you know, what government agency is that efficient?
Exactly. I mean, they can't even not leak the damn SEAL team of small SEAL team that snuck into a compound and snuffed a guy. They can't even not leak that. How are you gonna have something that involves 900 people? And I mean, look here's the kind of absurdity. I hate to use the word absurd when we've just had a great friend on the radio who really believes this crap. But here's the absurdity of it. You know, there are people who go as far as to say that the plane in the field didn't really crash. I mean, you go there and you don't see a broken piece of fuselage laying around. You don't see a wing anywhere. You don't even see an intact engine. And of course that plane didn't belly land the way most crashes occur. It spun an uncontrolled nose first spin, from 24,000 feet. So, you're not going to see anything bigger than a toothpick. But here's my question. If you didn't crash a plane that's on the ATC tapes as having been hijacked, that didn't appear ever again at any other airport. If you're going to not crash it in the field in Pennsylvania, what are you going to do with it? I mean, you've already shown me, if this is a conspiracy, that you're willing to fly 300 human beings into the side of a building with 3,000 human beings. You wouldn't crash a plane in a field in Pennsylvania?
Right. Well, and another thing is, if some people purport that it was shot down, which, you know, I didn't disregard right off the bat because it was headed toward the White House. But but the whole thing is that, you know, if it was, then the debris would have been scattered over a much wider area.
That's right.
So, again,
And that, you know, that wouldn't have been a part of it. You know, I can guarantee you if the MF-16s had caught up with it, it would have been shot down.
Right.
So,
yeah.
what's the big deal if it was?
But if it had continued, I believe that would have been the action taken. I mean, they scrambled for a reason. But I don't believe that it was.
You know, I
believe that went down like it was portrayed, like it was stated that it did.
But
so
in our last minute before we wrap up, I want to complete what Lisa would have wanted to say if she was here, and that is, all of this school choice crap is just that. It is crap. All of this stuff about parents getting to pick the school or even parents getting vouchers to go to whatever school they want to. In the face of Common Core, any charter school is nothing more than another public school. Regardless of how you finance sending your kid there, whether it's a voucher or whether it's just a free school to you, if it's a charter school, it's nothing but another public school because it's got the Common Core, it's got the same teaching staff, it has got everything that the state public across the street has. And that's what Lisa would have wanted to get in there. So for her, since she's obviously indisposed somewhere, we'll let it go. Kevin, thanks a lot. I've enjoyed the half hour tonight. I always love it when you and I get to talk about things. We had more people along who disagreed with us. We agree on too much. I like these roundtables to be a little bit spicier. But until Monday, folks, you people out there in the grassroots of Missouri, we want you to have a great weekend, and we want you to come back safe and sound Monday night when we'll have Laura on to talk to us for an extended period of time, educate us about the Fed, and tell us why we need to audit it. And then we'll have another good week next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.